We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Velasquez.
Good morning. May it please the Honorable Court. My name is Ralph.
Please wait until you're calling.
Of course.
Mr. Meshick.
Your Honor, I'm sorry. May it please the Honorable Court. My name is Ralph Meshick, and I'm one of the attorneys for Mr. Velasquez. Your Honors, the Supreme Court decision in Collins versus Virginia requires a finding that law enforcement officers violated Mr. Velasquez's Fourth Amendment rights in trespassing onto his property to search his truck. In Collins, as you know, the court relied upon its prior 2013 decision in Jardine to hold that law enforcement officers cannot cross the curtilage to search a car, whether the car is located in a driveway, in a garage, or in the house itself. Indeed, the government no longer argues that a warrantless intrusion into the curtilage of a home can survive constitutional scrutiny and recognizes the constitutional violation here. Thus, the question that remains is whether any exception to the exclusionary rule holds here. The government argues in their briefs, their submissions, that the contraband should be suppressed on the basis of the inevitable discovery rule. The government
You argued that the government didn't develop a record that would satisfy its burden on inevitable discovery. What record evidence was needed here beyond what the facts already show? I mean, is there any doubt that the government would have sought a warrant if it had been aware that the automobile exception would be invalidated on private property? And is there any doubt that a court would issue such a warrant? And what else would be needed?
Your Honor, there is, in my opinion, I was hoping this question wasn't going to be asked, but I anticipated it. I believe there is no doubt that if they had sought a warrant would have been obtained, and they would have been able to search the truck and find the contraband. I don't disagree with that. But I do believe that there was ample opportunity for the officers, for law enforcement, to obtain that search warrant. They had a script here. They didn't follow, I should say, any protocol. There's no information that they even acted on it. They did, in fact, have ample time to obtain that warrant, because after they negotiated for the sale of the drugs with Velasquez, they then knew that Velasquez was going to obtain the drugs either from his home or from a different location. And then they were going to rendezvous again with Velasquez about an hour or 45 minutes later. So at a hotel where the exchange would have taken place. They didn't do that. So again, my position is, our position is, that they had an ample time, ample opportunity, and they did not want to be inconvenienced with obtaining a search warrant. There is a protocol they could have followed for a telephonic search warrant, and they sought not to do that, Your Honor. I hope that answers your question. To continue, as I said, they knew the timing of the sale, and they waited at least an hour, almost an hour, for Velasquez to leave his house without trying to obtain any kind of a warrant. Here, a telephonic warrant would have certainly been reasonable. And to be sure, the officers could have waited and arrested Velasquez as he left his property, but they chose not to. The inevitable discovery exception cannot be used as an excuse for their strategic choices that law enforcement made. Moreover, the government only raised this argument of suppression at the suppression motion, after the suppression motion, and there was no factual record made to carry its burden. In short, the government failed to meet its burden to submit the evidence below that the agents would have pursued an alternative lawful means to obtain the contraband. And I would also parenthetically add that remand would not be appropriate, only because there is no factual basis to develop here in the record. As an alternative, remand would be proper to develop, expand, or elaborate on the record. Finally, At this late date, Your Honors, the government argues that the lower court's decision on two grounds that were not raised below. One is the good faith exception.
Could you concentrate on that one, please?
Of course, Your Honor.
You seem to be arguing that that issue was raised too late. It's hard for me to see that, given that both sides seem to have agreed that Hines controlled until Collins was decided.
Well, Your Honor, I have to take responsibility for this. It's not in my brief. I had thought deeply about it, but I would submit now that Hines, the decision of this court, really was not the law, that Jardine was always the law. But to go back and briefly answer your question.
Well, I mean, you argued to us that we should overrule Hines.
I did.
That suggests pretty strongly that that's controlling circuit precedent that agents could have relied upon.
Well, my argument would be that Jardine was always the law, believe it or not. That Collins severely destabilized Hines. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court said that Collins was an easy decision. Now, I know nothing is easy, but in the decision, in the majority opinion, they stated that it is an easy decision because Jardine paved the way. Jardine was a trespass case. And since 2006, that has been the law. This was a trespass case as well.
Is it your view then that federal law enforcement agents should have figured out before we did that Jardine's undermined Hines,
well,
rather?
Not before we did, but it did undermine it. I would assert that Hines was always on shaky ground. Because Hines came, it was a 1985 decision, and Jardine was a 2006 decision. And once Jardine was decided by the High Court, one of the pillars of Jardine, Hines was severely undermined by Collins because of trespass. They should have seen it coming. It was definitely on the radar. And that's an argument.
What in Davis allows a court to suppress evidence that was properly gathered under established law because they should have seen a change coming? I didn't see anything in Davis about should have seen a change coming.
Well, those are my words. I'm sorry. I wish I could give you a more perfect answer.
Let me try it a different way, and that is the Virginia Supreme Court in Collins seems not to have seen it coming, right?
Yes, that's true.
So
That's true. But again, I think that the foundation of Jardine or the rationale of Jardine is so consequential that it was in fact on the radar, that Hines could not stand as good law. That would be my argument.
That it's on the radar, everybody can see that. That's why certiorari was granted in Collins.
Yes.
The question I'm asking is, where is there an on the radar exception to the rule of Davis?
There is no on the radar exception. I'll be more precise. The court, Your Honor, is absolutely correct. But I will say this. Jardine seriously, seriously undermined the Hines decision. It came later. It rested on trespass. And in this case, there's no showing that the agents knew of it. They didn't call an assistant United States attorney to find out what the state of the law was. And as far as good faith is concerned, to answer Judge,
you seem to be thinking of this as a subjective, a mental defense. There's no mental role in any Fourth Amendment case. Good faith may get used. But the question is objective. Objectively, what was the Seventh Circuit's understanding of constitutional law? Not what was in anybody's heads.
Objectively, a trespass under Hines under the Seventh Circuit would be sanctioned. They could have gone onto the property, onto the curtilage, and searched the car. That was the state of Hines. And again, I am arguing, I'm asserting, I think logically, that Hines was severely damaged, severely destabilized, was weakened by the Jardine opinion, which was all was which preceded, which succeeded Hines, which came after Hines. The government, I think I'm running out of time. Respectfully, I would reserve the balance of my time. Thank you very much.
In fact, your time has expired, Kevin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Fullerton.
Good morning. May it please the court. Regardless of Collins' issue and the curtilage issue, the court should affirm the district court's denial of the suppression motion. The district court, in addition to finding that the automobile exception applied and excused the lack of a warrant, found that inevitable discovery excused the lack of a warrant. And that's correct. Under inevitable discovery doctrine, if the record shows that the officers would have and could have obtained the evidence by lawful means, whether by a warrant.
Haven't we said that the inevitable discovery doctrine also requires the officers to have started using those lawful means before the search? Because otherwise, the inevitable discovery argument just ends the exclusionary rule in all cases mm-hmm. where there's probable cause.
You mean in terms of starting the process of obtaining a warrant or something like that?
That's what we've said.
Well, I don't think the inevitable discovery...
The Supreme Court has not said any search supported by probable cause never leads to exclusion of evidence. And that's what your argument is, because if you have probable cause, you can get a warrant. But that's not what the Supreme Court has held.
Well, I'm also arguing that there were lawful means that
you,
these agents...
You might want to make arguments other than inevitable discovery here.
Well, that's one that the district court...
The Supreme Court may eventually ditch the exclusionary rule when there is probable cause, but a backdoor means of doing it is not within our portfolio.
Well, I meant...
Would you explain the exigency here? The defendant was arrested. The truck is parked on the driveway. What prevented the police from calling a judge and asking for a telephonic warrant? Is there some evidence the wife would have made off with the suitcase? I mean, I simply do not see the exigency once the defendant and the truck were essentially secured.
Well, I think as I understood it, the objection was to the seizure of the truck and the bag that took place on the driveway. And we're saying that seizure, search of the truck, seizure of the bag, arrest of the defendant, took place under exigent circumstances, namely that the officers could reasonably have thought that Mr. Velazquez was in the process of loading his truck with the 12 kilograms of cocaine and driving away. That was reasonable because that would have been reasonable to think because Mr. Velazquez had just arranged with some undercover agents to conduct a 12 kilogram cocaine transaction at another location and said that he was going to go home and or go someplace and get it and bring it back in a suitcase. When the agents saw that happening, they could reasonably have thought that he was in the process of driving away, and that posed a risk that Mr. Velazquez would attempt to flee, attempt to evade arrest.
Mr. Fullerton, I thought the question assumed that the arrest was proper under the circumstances. And rather, once he's under control, what was the exigency for moving forward without a warrant?
Right.
Well, if the arrest was proper, then I think... Let me step back.
It doesn't mean you have a perfectly good argument under Davis, but it's hard for me to see exigent circumstances here.
As I understand it, the arrest and the seizure took place simultaneously, essentially. Without the seizure of the cocaine, I'm not sure they would have arrested the defendant. Now, they may have had probable cause or reason to think that he was involved.
Didn't they have evidence that he conspired to...
Yeah, they did. Right.
Right? They've got it.
Right.
It's up to them to decide about the timing. And I don't think anybody here is going to criticize the timing of the arrest to do it on private property without risking a car chase on the streets. So.
Right. That, I hadn't thought about that argument, Your Honor. I apologize. The exigency has to do with the evidence and the potential that it would leave the location and flee and make it destroyed and so on. The exigency would cease to exist when Mr. Velasquez was arrested, but another exception may apply, namely the search incident to arrest under Arizona versus Gant. And that was an argument made by the government in the district court, not ruled on by the district court. But it would provide a basis for searching the car, aside from the exigencies of the circumstances. The final argument I'd like to, or the next argument I'd like to talk about is the good faith argument. And that, under the good faith argument, and as I understand it, my opponent has essentially conceded that under then-existing Seventh Circuit law, the agents could reasonably think that they could conduct a search of the automobile and seize those drugs under the automobile exception to the search warrant requirement. That was Hines applied the automobile exception to a vehicle parked in a driveway. Here you had a vehicle parked in a driveway with probable cause to believe there were going to be drugs in it because they had seen him load the suitcase. Under that rule of law and the court's other cases regarding driveways and police access to driveways, the agents were acting in good faith when they seized the truck and seized the cocaine. Given that, and given that the government couldn't anticipate that defense before Collins, we think that this court should affirm the ruling of the district court. If there are no other questions, we just ask for affirmance here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.